Building in the Bitcoin space, especially at this time of the cycle, is just electric. There is nothing that substitutes it. The energy in the space is so good.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. We are back in the saddle. This is the Wayback Machine.
Adam, the Wayback Machine.
You were on the very first episode of the pod a year and a half ago, about.
Yeah, wow.
Many moons. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you, man. It's great to be back. We are both older and wiser and more hardened Bitcoiners because of the time that has passed, which
yes.
is good.
Yes, very true. And you've been busy?
Yes. Yeah, man, it's been good. I mean, when I think about the last 18 months, it simultaneously feels like a snap has gone by and here we are. And then you start really thinking, I mean, you know, with the new year, here we are in 2025, and you reflect on the past, you know, year or so, and start thinking, oh yeah, we did that. Oh yeah, we did that. And on the corporate side, and then, you know, with the family, like, we've got four kids. I mean, in the last year, my youngest has started walking and talking, and my oldest is playing a new level of hockey, and that's very exciting for him. And my two daughters are thriving in their activities, and, you know, they're growing up, and it's like, wow, you know, we've been so lucky to travel the world and see plenty of different Bitcoin spaces. So yeah, man, it's been cool. I mean, yeah, with Bitcoin Well, we just went, like, starting early last year, we launched in the USA, and we've just crossed 6,000 customers in the USA, which is super great. And yeah, we've been busy. It's been a lot of fun, man. Building in the Bitcoin space, especially at this time of the cycle, is just electric. There is nothing that substitutes it. The energy in the space is so good. Sometimes it's easy to forget, I find, like, going through the booms and the busts of the cycles, you can forget how amazing the bull market is when you're just trudging in the bear market.
Absolutely. So Q1 2025, lots of things going on with Bitcoin around the world. What's your, like, are you surprised? What has surprised you? Where we thought you would be?
Yeah, a good question. It's so crazy, because if you had asked me in 2017, will Bitcoin be going up in 2025, I would have said yes, because that's just the four-year cycle that I've kind of believed in, that, you know, on the highest macro level, we can kind of observe from the charts or from the history. But if you would have asked me, is the leader of the free world going to be promoting a strategic Bitcoin reserve in the USA? I would have said no. And so I don't understand how those two things correlate. Is it a chicken or the egg? You know, this is the question that I have. And then the bigger question in my mind is, you know, what will cause the bear? I do think we are going to continue to see a boom bust type of cycle. I think that free markets, especially in their infancy, which Bitcoin is, just ripe for boom and bust. But historically, you know, for the last, like, since 2013, when I've been, you know, studying and following Bitcoin, we've kind of had, like, the boom of 2013 was caused by, you know, the Mt. Gox being launched and having kind of a true market to be able to buy Bitcoin. And all of a sudden, you know, all this money rushing into Bitcoin. And then, you know, 18 months later, Mt. Gox kind of disappears. And that's what causes the subsequent crash. And then we have 2017, driven by ICOs and the Ethereum, you know, kind of, like, invention and run. And we have all these ICOs generating incredible demand for digital assets. And then ICOs, turns out they're all illegal. And so there's another rug pull. Yeah, whoopsie. There's another rug pull, and the market, you know, subsequently crashes. And then 2021 was driven by the NFT shitcoin casino, where we've got, you know, the FTXs of the world, like, promoting every scam under the sun. And then, what do you know, FTX rug pulls, and there goes the market in 2021. And so, you know, we kind of have simultaneously Bitcoin's greatest promoters and the you know, the catalyst for why Bitcoin is on the rise, also becoming its greatest enemy, you know, a year or 2 years later, and creating a short-term kind of collapse. And so, you know, here I am in my, like, in theory, like, I like to live in theory land and playing different scenarios out in my head. And I'm like, well, if it's the US government creating the boom, you know, where are we exposed? And will it also be a US government creating the bust? Or does this break the cycle? And that's always the other option, is does this break the cycle? But, you know, here we are, Bitcoin sitting around 100K. I firmly believe we are going to see in a year, Bitcoin is crashing to 150K. That'll be the headline, and Bitcoin will be dead because it's only 150K. And we're going to see all the FUD in the world, but I'm still, yeah, I'm cautiously, you know, pessimistic around what will be causing that and trying to sort out, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I think it's out of my control, out of my hands. What I have to do and we have to do as like business, Bitcoin business leaders is really decide how do we respond and how do we build our businesses and build our products in and, you know, manage our balance sheets in such a way that is not going to leave us like on life support in a year and a half.
Yeah. So that's a great segue into a question to ask you about. Recently, Bitcoinwell announced a debt offering and you guys have moved forward with a Bitcoin treasury management strategy.
Yes.
And you were even a finalist in a Twitter poll speculating as to who would be the Canadian Michael Saylor.
I didn't know this. This is actually, maybe I saw some rumblings on this. I didn't realize I was a finalist, though. That's,
you didn't win.
Okay. Rats.
I didn't either. So I wasn't even.
Were you on the ballot?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'd love to talk a little bit about this move. Firstly, maybe to take it down to like 10 feet off the ground. What is a company doing when they are offering debt and buying Bitcoin? And two, what are the considerations in managing Bitcoin as a balance sheet asset? Three, why would a company want to do that?
So yeah, I mean, at the ground level, a debt offering to buy Bitcoin is basically our company, specifically like we're publicly traded here in Canada, a quasi public company in the USA. We have the ability to print equity and print shares, you know, issue new shares in the organization. And so what we've done is we've said to investors, hey, we're going to give you debt in the organization, meaning we're going to owe you, if you're going to give us money and we're going to owe you that money and we're going to pay you interest in equity of the organization. Typically, if you go to a bank to get debt, you know, you borrow 100K, they're going to charge you 10%. You got to pay them 10 grand a year. Generally in cash. The bank doesn't take Bitcoin well shares in interest, unfortunately. But in this case, the investor says, I like the company. I like what you guys are doing. I'm going to happily give you, let's say 100K. And I want as my interest payment, I want, you know, my 10% to come not in cash, but in Bitcoin well shares. And then we've also structured it so that their principal, the 100K that they gave us as an example, is convertible into Bitcoin well equity at a predetermined price. So in this case, I believe it's 23 cents. We're currently trading about 20 cents. So basically the investor kind of has, you know, a little bit of a recourse. A simple equity investment gives them no recourse over the company. They have the company that owes them nothing. They are a minority shareholder, you know, common rights, common. They're just a minority shareholder in the company. But when you have a debt offering, you're listed as a debt holder in the legalities. And if the company goes belly up, you have a little bit of recourse to that, which is kind of why they'd rather do a debt offering to an equity offering. And then from our perspective as a company, we get to issue shares at a higher price than what we're currently trading at. If I wanted to issue equity today, you know, I could do it at 20 cents, but probably it's going to be closer to 18 or 17 cents because the big investors want a discount to the market. And so from my perspective, you know, even at a 10% interest rate, I'm still issuing shares higher than I otherwise could as an equity offering because of this debt offering. And so it's kind of a win-win. And the investor feels like they get a little bit more value than just a simple equity issuance. They have a little bit more recourse, a little bit more protection. And we have to issue less shares as a result of getting the money in the bank. And then, yeah, with the money in the bank, and part of the reason kind of to put a bow on it is we're using a portion of this money to buy Bitcoin. And so the investor over a long enough period understands like Bitcoin is going to be volatile, but if the company holds the asset, then they're feeling, you know, they're feeling good about owning, you know, a company. If I give a company debt and they have Bitcoin and I believe that on a 5-year time frame, you know, Bitcoin is going to be net positive, well, then I feel pretty good about giving that company debt because I feel like I will have recourse and the assets that they hold will maintain value over a period of time. And so, yeah, it's kind of a win-win. I think the big misconception around this strategy, and certainly a conception that I had around Saylor and this strategy, is that the debt isn't pegged to Bitcoin. In the past, and even our organization has utilized collateralizing our Bitcoin to receive fiat, meaning if I have one Bitcoin valued at 100K, I give it to you and you give me $50,000 in a loan. And, you know, when I pay that $50,000 back, I get my Bitcoin back. It's a way to exercise your liquidity in Bitcoin without actually selling it, which is a decent strategy. The problem there is if the one Bitcoin is no longer worth 100K, if it's all of a sudden worth 80 or 60 or 50K, then the platforms, the ones that gave you the debt, generally will liquidate and you're left with no Bitcoin. And so, and that also creates a taxable event. So it's kind of like a double hit if the price drops. And, yeah, I think a big misconception is that, you know, while we're holding Bitcoin and, you know, frankly, our share price is heavily tied to the price of Bitcoin anyways, even without holding Bitcoin. But, you know, with us holding Bitcoin, sure, if the price of Bitcoin got cut in half, it's not inconceivable that our equity would also be only worth 10 cents instead of 20 cents. However, it's now my job and our job as a collective team to kind of create a business model and create a business or add to our business that even if the price of Bitcoin falls, we're still able to monetize and still able to maintain some value for the shareholders. So yeah, kind of a long-winded explanation to why, but this convertible debt offering is so unique and so interesting. I think we were one of the first ones in Canada to do this. I know the investment bankers were like, you know, kind of scratching their heads, and it took us a lot of time to figure out what the right structure was going to be. And we actually had a lot of issues with like compliance departments in the investment banks trying to figure out how to properly offer this product to the retail investor. And so we got it, we nailed it, we closed the financing. I'm very happy we did that. And yeah, it's been good. Cash is in the bank, Bitcoin in cold storage, and the rest is history. So it's cool. But I think, you know, what it means and how a company should look at this, you know, we're playing games inside the fiat market because of our public offering. We have the luxury of doing that. If you have the luxury of doing that, I firmly believe that you should. I mean, 6 months ago, we were valued at 5 cents and here we are at 20. And so for me not to take advantage of that would be stupid. It would be irresponsible not to do anything with that. But if you are, you know, I love the Tahini story. Tahini's is a small shawarma shop started in Eastern Canada, is now expanded across the country. And they just take their profits and they put it into Bitcoin. And it is so cool to see a small business protect their value with this revolutionary asset, not with anything fancy. There is nothing. It's so boring at the end of the day. They just, you know, if they make a 10% profit on $1 million in revenue, they take $100,000 and they buy Bitcoin and they just save it. And it's just like, what a beautiful, simple way to run through your business. And, you know, at the end of a year or 2 years or 3 years of doing this, all of a sudden you have a couple hundred thousand dollars in this example of Bitcoin. And let's say that Bitcoin has appreciated, then now you have options. Do you want to open up another store? Do you want to invest in a remodeling of a store? Are you going to open up a new business? Are you going to just pay yourself a healthy dividend and go on a trip? It's just, it opens up options for business owners. Right now, business owners, especially at the, you know, we're talking about small businesses, but I believe that large scale corporations that are kind of singly owned by one individual, they're kind of screwed right now because you're limited as to what you can buy. Anything you can buy is horribly illiquid. Like you're buying a giant $10 million commercial building to try to protect your profits. And Bitcoin just gives you an opportunity to completely change the game, own and control your future value. And also, like, we live in a pretty turbulent business climate here in Canada, especially. You have the ability for your business to just like take your coins and go. Like, there is the legal jurisdictional problems that come with owning assets inside of a corporation, inside of a country or whatever. But at the end of the day, like when you are, you know, when shit hits the fan and you are in complete turmoil, if that ever were to occur, you just have physical access to the Bitcoin. You're not fighting with some, like the merchant in Costa Rica is not worried about, well, were those Bitcoin purchased in an LLC in Oklahoma? Like they don't care. It's like, yeah, Bitcoin, good. Give me the coins. Here's your fruits and your steak. Like off you go. And that's very liberating and freeing. And so I think, yeah, for small businesses, I mean, small businesses are effectively just large individuals, large collectives. And so I think that is very important. And that'll be the next big run, I think, is how does a small business protect their value? And finally, we are incentivized to run cash flowing, value producing businesses and kind of almost disincentivized from over leveraging to grow, like in the fiat startup game, right? And I fell into this trap of this, you know, leverage up, show growth to get more leverage. And this was the, this is the kind of the cycle. And, you know, every tech startup under the sun is operated this way. It feels like the pendulum is shifting due to, and thanks to Bitcoin, where we're incentivized to just like lower your time preference, you know, build a good, strong, healthy business and then stack sats. And that feels like a better, feels like a net benefit to society if there's more businesses operating that way.
Absolutely. Do you think that has this already started to like permeate into the corporate culture of how you guys think about creating value and running a business day to day?
Yeah, man. I mean, I've heard Jack Mallers talk about this more than anyone, but even ourselves internally, like if Bitcoin, depending on the numbers you want to use, Bitcoin objectively has anywhere from a 20 to a 60% year over year appreciation in value. And so anytime you are investing any spare cash, you have to be able to justify a 20 to a 60% year over year increase in the business for it to even start to make sense.
Yeah.
All of a sudden now we aren't racing against inflation of 2 to 10 to 15%, depending on how you're going to measure it. You're racing against an asset, not to mention the stress and the work. Like it's hard work running a business, man. I mean, like you've been at the grind today, like, and we're in person. I get to witness this. It's a lot. And so it's like, what are the chances that this exceeds 60%? And that's all well and good, but I can do nothing and have this do 60%. So what is my time and my effort and my stress level worth? Now I have to probably get closer to like 80 to 100% for it to even be a conversation. Yeah, I think again, that sounds like, you know, and this is where the other side of the argument comes in, which is like deflationary environments, you know, they create stale innovation. And I can see why that argument exists, because what I'm saying is the truth. Like you are disincentivized from innovating and gambling and rushing. But the contrary to that is that the smart people and the ones that are, you know, first principle thinkers will have an advantage in knowing what is important enough to spend the time on, because we're still going to want to innovate. There's still going to be a competition in the market to develop, be first to market and have a race there. And so I do think that things will slow down. We won't have Apple blowing billions of dollars. I think it was $10 billion on the car that they just scrapped. 250 people whose last 3 years of their lives and their efforts at work and the race to meet the sprint deadlines just erased. Doesn't matter. But we're not going to have that anymore. There will be so much less waste on a Bitcoin standard in that corporate culture, which, you know, less waste also turns into probably like a little bit less or a little bit slower innovation. But I think that the sacrifice of slower innovation is a welcomed addition to this fast-paced rush, rush, rush life that we currently live in. And right now, under a fiat standard, I feel like the best business leaders are not the ones that are producing the most value for the world. They're the ones that are able to kind of like, you know, trick, or maybe better term, you know, schmooze the money spigot. And I think we want a value for value world. I think the world fits a little bit better when it's value for value. And, you know, those that have the most rewards are the ones that produce the most value. And I think that's, again, as far as benefit to society, that feels like the better one.
You know, we talked about Sailor and MicroStrategy. I have a two-part question. So the first half is, are you surprised at the rate of the announcement, of the pace of the Bitcoin that they're buying? And where do you think he's going with this?
Man, yeah, the pace is out of hand. Like, first of all, I cannot believe the debt terms that he is getting. He is printing money at an alarming rate, faster than the government's. He has better terms than the US government right now. He's getting 0% interest debt on an equity that is like, I don't think, I would hazard a guess, and you know, maybe there's some research on this. I don't think 50% of the MSTR shareholders know what MSTR does. I don't think they know what the operating business is, which is crazy and absolutely mind-blowing. So yeah, that really, really shocked me. And I think he's created a flywheel infinite money glitch for sure. This is, I think, kind of the part of the issue with the strategy that he has, in my opinion, is that it's pigeonholed, it's single focused into an asset that is turbulent. And, you know, turbulence is great. And right now we are turbulent on the way up and it is just gorgeous. Everyone's got gains. It's green candles the whole way. No problems. But inevitably, the physics states when it's turbulent on the way up, it has to be turbulent on the way down. And I just hope that people are ready for it because it will not surprise me when MicroStrategy just drops 60% in a day. That will not surprise me one bit. And it's inevitable. And so the people that are like, you know, FOMOing in, max leverage in, this has the same vibes as FOMOing into whatever, you know, scam NFT of the year looked like. So yes, there should be some caution there. However, I do think that there's a real world, at least there's a real world operating business kind of doing this. So I'm maybe talking out of both sides of my mouth there. So the pace has definitely surprised me. I think where he's going to continue, you know, tapping into the well for as long as he possibly can. If someone was coming to me offering me tens of billions of dollars for free, I would take it. Yep. And I would also buy Bitcoin. He's very right. We are in accumulation and there is nobody on planet Earth accumulating Bitcoin in a better fashion than Michael Saylor. I think that he stated, and where I'm kind of losing him is the next step to his strategy on wanting to become, like wanting to collateralize and kind of fiatize Bitcoin. I think that he is bang on in most everything he discusses, most everything he talks about. He's 100% on Bitcoin being, you know, the property of New York and all the rest of it. Where he's losing Bitcoiners right now is his desire to create leverage on top of Bitcoin. And the only reason, like we all talk about leveraging a house, but we don't really leverage the house. We leverage the dollar against the house. And the only reason that's possible is because the dollar is printed into infinite. We're not giving you 5% more house every single year. We're giving you 5% of the value of the house paid in dollars that were just printed every year. And that's, I think, I'm not sure if he's just short circuiting, if it's just part of the story to get his fiat audience engaged. I'm not too sure what the disconnect is, but like you can't print Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so how do we collateralize an asset that you cannot print to be determined? I mean, obviously, you know, you and I kind of believe in and are marching towards a hyper Bitcoinized society, which is, I believe, the best thing that humanity could probably see out of a monetary policy. And so I struggle to see how he's going to benefit or how, you know, the world will benefit. And as a result, he and his shareholders will benefit trying to force Bitcoin into something that it's not. But to be determined, I suppose.
Yeah. He is at odds with the idea that Bitcoin is money. Right?
Right.
Which is, I'm a fan, but I think that one of the great things about Bitcoin is that there is lots of room for debate and no one knows.
Well, and the cool thing is too, is like, it gets to be, it's just a protocol. It's just rules without rulers. And I love that he's able to experiment for all of us. And I love that we get to disagree with him on certain things and agree with him on other things. And we just all get to watch, you know, this, I feel like we're in, you know, kind of this new age of land exploration for the first time. Imagine we're all settlers on a land for the first time and we're trying fruit. And like the first guy that tried poison berries just died. And then people had to be like, yeah, don't eat those ones because this guy did and he's not doing so good anymore. And we're kind of in that territory with asset exploration in the digital realm. And that's really cool. I think it's great that it's just the Wild West free market. And we get to see, you know, the incredible rewards will go towards those that, you know, think very, very critically on a first principles basis and observe the protocol at the deepest level. And right now, I don't know if that's Saylor. I think that he's observed the fiat games at the deepest level and he's winning, frankly. Like, he's got a lot more coin than I do. Probably will ever have. But I think that, is he winning the game of, you know, true Bitcoin exploration to be determined? If he does nothing, certainly, because he'll have piles and piles of coin. But if he tries to, you know, fiatize Bitcoin and collateralize it, and, you know, if your JP Morgan bank gives you 5% on your Bitcoin deposit, wouldn't you want that? Maybe we start drifting away from that. And I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We've seen him go from, you know, Bitcoin is everything, Bitcoin and self-custody for that, all the way over to, you know, there's a small group of crypto anarchists that think self-custody is better than XYZ. And so we're watching in real time what the biggest face right now in the space is saying and how his opinions are shifting. And I think it's beautiful. And I'm very pro shifting opinions, even when they shift away from what I believe, because it means more thought, more information for all of us to benefit from and make our own decisions. So there's, it's cool.
People are following his lead, and Semler Scientific, Metaplanet, you know, there have been now a number of publicly traded companies.
Mara, I think, is moving. Yep.
Yep. How far away do you think we are before a time where basically every company, where this idea will become just normal?
Yeah. And, Great question. I think about this a lot, because this is why Bitcoin, we wanted to be one of the first to do it, because I think that we will get a premium as a result of that. We already can kind of see that even in our tiny micro space in Canada, we're trading, you know, Bitcoin is dumping this week, like down, I think 5 or 6%, and we're trading flat where lots of our peers are down 15-20%. And so there could be a number of reasons for that, but I'm going to say it's because we're first to a new strategy and take all the credit. I think that this will be commonplace in 2 to 3 years, and certainly into the next cycle. Personally, I believe that we're probably, and this is whether or not you believe in the bear and bull cycle that I'm going to ascribe to for the next little while. But I think that right now, trying to set up a debt offering and buying Bitcoin in this space, if you do it quickly, you'll be fine. But if you were to start that in June, July, August, I think it might be kind of start to work against you, especially in the public markets. And I think the best thing we can do is build our businesses in whatever industry that they may be and prioritize cash flow. Again, for the first time in recent history, in like 5 decades, we are incentivized to build cash flowing businesses. And soon, like right now, you know, the dot-com bubble opened up the possibility for businesses to build growth equity. If I can show you that I'm going to grow at 500% a year, then you should pay me, you know, a 25x premium on my current value, because I'm going to grow at light speed. And that worked. And now we have piles of inflated equity on the market that either can't grow or the growth isn't worth as much as it used to be. And so we're going to watch that transition. It's been a quarter century. That seems like a reasonable life cycle for the information age to be valuing companies this way. And I think that the next shift and the next cycle will be, I produce so much cash that I get to buy this much Bitcoin, and it's unencumbered, and I've got a full team dedicated to keeping it safe, and I am good to go. And that will be the winning company, is the one that can produce value at such an alarming rate that they get to buy the most Bitcoin on a DCA basis. Because right now, everyone's rushing to accumulate Bitcoin. But we have to think, the businesses in 2 generations, while they will be accumulating Bitcoin, they're going to be trading value for Bitcoin. Like, there's still a lot of Bitcoin being minted every day and every year. But we're not that far away from it being like 1 Bitcoin a day that's coming into circulation.
In the whole world,
in the whole globe. And Sailor's buying what? Thousands a day? Like, it's wild. And so there will come a time when, yeah, I think this, if you can print cash or like create value to have lots of customers giving you lots of cash, then, or creating lots of cash in that environment, then you'll be able to be valued in that way. So I think we're, 2 to 3 years, maybe 2 to 5 years away from this being like, what's your Bitcoin strategy, being a very common question in an investment meeting.
Do you have business colleagues in your network asking you about this yet? Or are people scratching their head? I mean, you obviously run a Bitcoin company, so this probably wouldn't seem out of left field for people who know you, but how has it been received for you personally?
Yeah, I think like definitely within my peer group, it was like matter of time type of vibe. I think it was earlier because we as a company, I over-leveraged in the peak of the bull market last cycle, 2021. I over-leveraged, you know, based on the information that I had at the time. If I knew everything I know now, I wouldn't make that same decision. And so I'm like an anti-debt type of guy. And so that was the big shock for lots of my peers, was like, yo, we know how strongly you feel against debt. Why the shift? And the big shift was that we can convert the debt into equity. This just felt like a delayed equity issuance to me. Less so you know, hey, the debt payments are due. How are we going to pay for this? And we have to make decisions. Like for a period of time, I was making a choice not to pay myself so we could make debt payments. This was the like the environment that the business was in. And that was tough to be in. So with that context, I think that was kind of the bigger surprise there. But we have had multiple small businesses reach out to Bitcoin Well, curious about adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. And crazy enough, or not so crazy enough, but just like very excitingly, understanding fully the why. Their only question was the how. 2-3 years ago, the question was, why would I do that? I read this was a good idea, but can you pitch me on it? Like, why would I want to have Bitcoin on my balance sheet? And now the conversation is, I fully understand why that's important. The question is now, how do I add Bitcoin to the balance sheet? So yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think that that's going to continue. We've got a business colleague that I've known. He's the CFO at like a, you know, pretty large oil and gas supplying, like parts supply business. In 2020, I think he started his company's, like he doesn't own it. He's the CFO at it, like a large enterprise, kind of like a family office run operation. And they've got a Bitcoin strategy and they have for the last 5 years, which is just fantastic. I think, especially in Alberta, man, like oil and gas is ripe for Bitcoin. Oh, yeah. And I think that we are going to see a massive move into the Bitcoin. Oil and gas will have a massive move into the Bitcoin space as a result, because it's very, very ripe and people are waking up to that fact.
It's exciting to see. I hope that Alberta matures into the Bitcoin paradise that we all kind of hope it will.
What do you think that looks like? Because I also, you know, like I've got the call. I tweet Daniel Smith, I think, like twice a month at this point. I'm in touch with multiple mayors in the Edmonton area. I've got like a, you know, people often ask me like what does a city have to do, or what does a province have to do with buying Bitcoin? And I've got kind of a quasi answer, but I'm always curious to know, like, what is a Bitcoin paradise, and how should we as citizens, you know, lobby or like look at, you know, look at what you guys did in Vancouver. That was pretty amazing. What should we as Canadians like look for, do you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, as a proud Albert myself, I've been living in British Columbia for 15 years, but born and raised in Edmonton. I remember the days well of Ralph Klein giving away Klein Bucks from the Heritage Fund.
Ralph Bucks, man. I remember also $400 was what I remember. And I got a new pair of skates because of it. Yeah. Like my dad was straight up like, we can go get skates.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm like beyond the CRA can't repeal this. I wasn't even living in Canada at the time. I was getting, there's a different time.
So what is the statute of limitations on tax fraud?
20 years. We're clear. Yeah. I mean, so like, I think conversely, I think it's Norway has done a really different job managing their sort of like balance sheet and, really creating like an engine for long-term prosperity. So to me, like when I really think about Alberta, that's the opportunity is, you know, taking a huge pile of money that does already exist and transforming it into like immortal capital and really just becoming that beacon of, you know, because Alberta does already bear disproportionate brunt through the equalization payment system.
You see the recent things that came out, it was something like, I think it was also BC collecting nothing, Saskatchewan, Alberta, obviously collecting nothing. And it was Ottawa or Ontario, Quebec, like an obscene amount of money.
Yeah.
Which is shocking to see how that plays out.
Yeah. So I think that that's probably unlikely to change unless something like structural changes. If Canada becomes the 51st state, who knows? But so this is something that is doable now. And I would love to see Alberta become the first Canadian province to start live. I'm actually a little bit surprised that there hasn't been any sort of public talk of it yet.
Me too. And I remember like when the premier had her radio show, her and I chatted. I was on her show probably 5 or 6 times talking about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. This was in the Quadriga collapse days. So 2018, 2019. I have personally talked to her a couple times about Bitcoin. I know that others in the space have also had, you know, similar, but at different times conversations about Bitcoin. She gets it. Like she is what I would call, you know, her and Pierre Poilievre both, they understand it quite well. And so it is also surprising to me. It makes me kind of like frustrated, you know, and I've got a limited scope in my tunnel with my echo chamber. Like obviously, you know, the world does not revolve around me or Bitcoin. But I am wondering, where is the urgency? We have Donald Trump ready to print into oblivion to buy Bitcoin, seemingly, you know, who's advising him, but RFK, whose claim was to buy 1 million Bitcoin. Like, yeah. When he said that, for four, well, I think it was 4 million Bitcoin. Like, yeah. I almost fell out of my chair and fainted in Nashville when I heard that. You know, we'd all maybe thought 1 million, maybe thought 500,000. But to hear him come out and in his, especially like his voice just made it so much more cinematic. Yeah. I will buy 4 million Bitcoin. It's like, what? Like, this guy is nuts. And, but then hearing how much he got it, like I would put Daniel Smith on that same level of knowledge in Bitcoin. Where's the 4 million coins?
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like the idea. So it's not happening in Canada, but you have Pennsylvania and Texas. And I think there are a few other states. I think it's actually 10 that are tabling legislation now. So now it's starting to feel like we're pretty far behind.
But the states also have independent legislation capabilities in the US where we're kind of like, do we even have the ability in Canada?
That's a good question. So even with the you know, within BC, the reason why Vancouver has happened before any other municipalities in BC is because they're the only ones that sort of have their own charter.
The Vancouver city does, the council. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
how do they get that charter?
I don't know. I don't know the history at all, but I can appreciate the you know, I think it's to your point. It's not as simple as it sounds.
Right.
And I mean, and again, even in the case of Vancouver, they have a supermajority on city council. I think that in Canada, you know, if you talk about Poilievre or probably Daniel Smith too, it's taking a risk to expose yourself to a political vulnerability. If you initiate something and by the time you get it off the ground, you're entering into a negative price time for Bitcoin. And now you're all of a sudden like it's your rocket ship out of to the end of your political career.
Yeah, well, this is, and funny you say that, because Pierre Poilievre was on this Bitcoin tirade, also the peak bull market of the last cycle.
Yeah.
And we watched him revert from Bitcoin is sound money, you know, hedge against inflation towards like blockchain will save the future. Like we watched that complete political recourse happen and it gave Trudeau piles of ammo. Now, of course, you know, classic politicians with high time preference. If he had just stayed his ground, could you imagine how much of a hero he would look like? It's like, no, I believe in what I say. This is the protocol. This is a result of the fiat cycle that we've created. Bitcoin will recover. Imagine saying that as we're seeing red candle, red candle, red candle. Today, those sound bites would be invaluable. Yeah. You know, elect a leader that thinks about the future, elect a leader that has low time preference. Like those sound bites would be just gold for a Poilievre looking to get into office now in 2 months. Like it would be amazing. But unfortunately, we don't have it. And so you're right. It's kind of like, but our political system is not designed to benefit a low time preference leader. Because I don't know when the next provincial election is in Alberta, but you know, you're right. If her timing's off, then she's out. It's done. It's like, they're like, guys, wait, just trust me. Like, wait on this one. It's like, no. We voted already. You're out. Goodbye. And what? She gets to be the crazy old, you know, lady that says, I told you so in like 10 years. Like, that's nothing for her. So it's not really set up to succeed, I think.
Yeah, this is the thing about, Japan. So Japan just announced that they conducted their own internal study and determined at the end that they didn't have enough information as to whether or not it'd be a good idea to proceed with a Bitcoin reserve nationally. I mean, Japan is like this really weird, totally unique economy where they have the most debt. And, you know, have been sort of stagnant to no growth for 30 years. Like if anyone needs a Bitcoin strategic reserve, it's Japan.
Yeah, 100%. But aren't they also like, how are they not collapsed now? Isn't there some weird mechanism in how they're hedging their debt? That's also kind of with like thin paper that for just, it kind of is defying physics right now.
Yeah, absolutely. They're basically funding the printing of money by buying their own debt, which
so they print to buy and creating new at the same time, and somehow it's not collapsing.
A perpetual motion machine.
No, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So I guess we're not alone. It's but I do wonder. You know, we're talking about this idea of like how far are we before it's normal for companies, and it does also feel like we're not that far away from it being very normal for countries. And, you know, it was just a few, I think it was actually just last week, Russia did announce publicly that they are using Bitcoin for international transactions as they see fit.
And Bitcoin. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And not like one of the, you know, stable coins or XRP or like any of the other alt blockchains. It's like they're using Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this, the other one I think was a noteworthy announcement was, I'm pretty sure it was Oman announced an intention to get 7% of the world's hash rate. You know, El Salvador is one thing. It's a very obscure country, kind of in the middle of nowhere. Didn't really have a lot going for it at the time. You know, kind of like, you know.
Huh, largest DEF capital of the world.
Something. Take a swing. But, you know, now you're talking about the U.S., Russia, you know, wealthy countries in the Middle East. This is a very, very tonal shift to who's in the room.
Yeah, man. No, I think it's and it was inevitable. And I think that there is still people, which what blows my mind is there are still people that don't understand why. And there are still people that cannot disconnect the sound money aspect with the blockchain, you know, kind of crypto craze aspect. And I don't know. I think it actually boils down to this societal disease that we have, which is just removing a first principle from our thought process and basically running towards, you know, this person I follow said this, I'm part of this team, I'm part of this camp. And so I want to, you know, just basically parrot what they say. And my opinions are not based in logic and are also unwavering. And I feel like that, you know, this sailor discussion we just had a couple minutes ago kind of also maybe shows us how Bitcoiners, this is kind of our Achilles heel, is we've got Saylor pushing the envelope and we've got this good debate inside. And I think the true Bitcoiners are having the debate, but there are people on the sidelines now in Bitcoin with just, you know, their fingers in their ears. La, 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 I don't want to hear it. I love Saylor or I hate him. He's evil. And I'm not willing to hear, you know, the other opposing view of the argument. I think that is probably, you know, what will kill Bitcoin or what has the biggest threat to Bitcoin is Bitcoiners almost like getting too rich and getting too arrogant in what got them rich and not being willing to continue to change. Because at one point or at some point, Bitcoin wasn't the best money in the world. And we're now asking everyone that was around at that time to reevaluate their opinion and look at why Bitcoin is the best money in the world. And I think that as Bitcoiners, we need to also be on the lookout for, hey, what is something that didn't used to be true, but now is because of a change in technology or information? And my call out to Bitcoiners, I suppose, would probably be that.
Time will tell.
Time will tell.
So maybe as we wrap up, Adam, what are you most excited about for Bitcoin? Well, in the next, remainder of 2025,
our big push is replace your bank with Bitcoin. Well, you know, I'm debanked in Canada. I'm building a product that I just need, and that I want my children to also benefit from. My wife is debanked. I don't know if my children are yet. Well, they're all still too young to, but of course I hope they live in a world where they don't even need a bank. But we're seeing right now, lots of people want to send Bitcoin Well money from their bank account and they're not able, like the bank is just saying no. And so our response to that is going to be, you know, let Bitcoin Well become your bank account. If you can deposit your paycheck in fiat, if you can buy Bitcoin from that, pay your bills from that, have your mortgage withdrawn from that, have your car payment withdrawn from that, you know, if you have a card that you can spend from that, why do you have a TD account? Why do you have a Bank of America account? And I think that replace your bank with Bitcoin Well, being able to access your money, which should be eventually Bitcoin in self-custody, to do anything that you can do with the fiat world is kind of where we want to push. So that's definitely what I'm most excited about. That's where, you know, it's kind of the North Star. What we've got on the wall is we want to enable Canadians and Americans and eventually the whole world to just replace your bank with Bitcoin Well. That's the holy grail. And yeah, I think I'm pumped, man. Last year was so great getting to go around the world and see how other cultures use Bitcoin, but also make friends. Deep connections in the Bitcoin space is so special, and hoping to lean into more of that this year as we, you know, see more and more people kind of find their role and their place and their space in this industry. And I'm just pumped to watch people build, man. Like, it is so cool. Like, you know, I love the Block Rewards product. Big, big fan of having people, as many people as possible, having access to, you know, immortal capital. I love that term. And I think that, you know, you and I were chatting earlier and something you said really struck me, which was, if we can contribute to the Bitcoin mission in this way, I will be like happy. And that vibe coming from, This is also my vibe. You know, other Bitcoiners we talk to, it is their vibe. Like, that is so special. And I am so ready for 2025 and for Bitcoiners to be working together and moving towards our common goal of fixing the world. Fix the money, fix the world, right?
Yeah.
And that's, so I'm very excited about that.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you again for coming on, Adam.
Thank you, man.
I'm sure, do this again, no doubt.
Yeah, man. In-person pod. Let's go.
Yeah, right on. And if you're listening all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you again for tuning in and hope to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits, supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.